Today's podcast is sponsored by the ICA Law Committee and presented by Jake Monk, Schutz, and Bowen LLP. Jake is an outside litigation counsel for insurers and corporations throughout Florida. Wide-ranging litigation disputes, including, as pertinent for the ICA, from individual disability and life policies. He is going to give us 5 tips to prepare for and execute an electronic, virtual, or Zoom hearing or trial.
Hey, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here. As you just said, I am an attorney down here in Miami, Florida, and I work in primarily in litigation for, as pertinent for the ICA, individual disability and life policies. And I've had a fortunate opportunity over the last few years to be on the cutting edge of the Zoom virtual hearings, depositions, trials, those types of things. I think as many members of the ICA know or are anticipating, courts have, with the advent of COVID-19 and the restrictions with COVID-19, Florida courts as well as national courts require hearings to be virtual due to COVID. There are also trials that have occurred through Zoom or other WebEx type program. And interestingly, despite the numbers going down with COVID and the state of the world getting better, many of the courts have appreciated the convenience, the reduced expense, and the efficiency with virtual hearings, virtual depositions, and some virtual trials. So I think it's possible that in the future, we're going to continue to see the use of technology in depositions and in hearings and in trials. I particularly had the unique experience to try Florida's first federal jury trial through Zoom. And what I mean by that is it was Florida's first entirely virtual trial through Zoom. The judge appeared through Zoom, the courtroom deputy, the attorneys appeared through Zoom, and even the jurors were on Zoom in the comfort of their own homes. We did jury selection through Zoom. We examined witnesses through Zoom. The witnesses appeared wherever they happened to be located. And so through this experience, I have kind of cobbled together what I think are 5 good tips for conducting yourself and preparing and existing in this post-COVID Zoom-friendly world. The first tip is called stage the scene. And as you'll see through all my tips, there's a little bit of alliteration, maybe because it's easier to remember, but maybe because it sounds good. So stage the scene is tip 1. And this applies to you as well as your clients and witnesses. So, and what I mean is these are the people that are inside your control. And so if you're an attorney, these are people that you have the ability to speak with beforehand and that you have the ability to prepare. They're your clients who trust your counsel and your advice. And if you're in-house counsel or you're someone at an insurer, then these apply to you because you'll be dealing with your attorneys who are in the virtual setting. So the first thing with stage the scene is you want to consider your location. Is it quiet? What does the background look like? Will you be distracted by people walking by? So if you're taking or testifying or arguing a hearing over Zoom, you probably want to make sure the dog isn't barking in the background or that your children aren't listening to television. Similarly, if you still have the luxury of going to the office, and I don't know if it's a luxury or if it's a burden, but if you're in the office and there are conference rooms with glass windows, you may want to be sure that you're in a more remote conference room so that people walking by don't distract you. You want to also avoid having anything that creates any type of inference about you or your client or the employees at the insurance company. We all want to look nice and we all want to put our best foot forward. And that may be having a nice fireplace with a mantle with pictures of children behind us. But even if those inferences are positive, those inferences can be distracting. So we oftentimes will recommend if there are those types of inanimate objects in the backgrounds that create positive or negative inferences, we will ask our clients or we will ask our witnesses to put a gray Zoom background on. Even the type of Zoom background, the virtual background, can create an inference. So if you're at the beach or if it looks like you're in a fancy conference room, you know, we have a fancy conference room Zoom background that we use from time to time for meetings. We avoid all of those in video depositions, in live trial testimony via Zoom and at hearings. We want to look pretty plain. So our preference usually is a gray background. and to be mindful of the objects that are behind you. I actually had a unique opportunity to defend a deposition where one of the attorneys had a white gun in the background on his wall. And so I always thought if a judge saw this, maybe the judge would appreciate it. But I also thought maybe there are some judges that don't appreciate it or would not like it. Same goes for jurors. Everyone carries biases, whether they care to admit to it or not. And so anything, whether it's a gun or anything particularly striking, may make someone think one way or another and judge the content of what your witness is saying by the things that are outside the witness's control. So there was also a witness that we had where, and this is a non-insurance case, so no one that anyone in the ICA would ever know, but a lady was being deposed at her kitchen table. And so you had the ability to look at all the ingredients that were on her countertop and all of the, the refrigerator behind her and what choice of chairs she had. And so those things become, even if they're not creating positive or negative inferences, they can still be distracting. So another interesting thing about staging the scene is you want to consider what you look like. So opposing counsel in one case that we had AirPods in his ears, the Apple white AirPods. And we were using more professional microphones and a mic stand. And so our view is we thought it made him look a little bit amateur, and maybe that would appeal to a younger crowd, but we thought playing towards the middle with just a standard microphone had more benefits than edgy AirPods. The final thing when staging the scene and for those witnesses and for yourself inside of your control is you want to think about the angle of the camera when you're in a Zoom hearing or you're in a Zoom deposition. You want to be eye level with the camera. You don't want to be too far away. If you're too far away, then the audience has a problem connecting with you. If you're too close, the audience may be looking up your nostrils. If the camera is too low and it's looking up at you, it can create that appearance of a double chin or the person in the camera is looking down on you. So eye level, maybe just a little farther than shoulder length away. And our view is that that allows the audience to connect and that the person on the other side of the camera to look the best. So that really wraps up the stage the scene tip for those that are in your control. Those are all the things to think about before a deposition or a hearing or a trial. The second tip is practice is paramount. So interestingly, and I think everyone that's been to trial understands this, whether you're a witness or whether you're in-house attorney or whether you're outside counsel, you're always being viewed in trial. So in trial, the jury can always see you. The judge can always see you. In trial, your actions are on display. And so your goal is to be calm and your goal is to appear professional and appear polished at all times. One of the things that we noticed with that lay of the land, that background, is that in a Zoom trial, the attorney and the client are boxes on the Zoom screen that the jury can always see. So if you're in a large courtroom, maybe the jury is sitting adjacent to you. Maybe they're looking at the judge from time to time, or maybe they're looking over at one side of the litigation. Maybe it's the plaintiff's side or the defendant's side. But when you're in a Zoom trial, the jury has you on their screen and they can see you and they're staring straight at you the entire time. So there's an elevated attention that's on you, even more than in a courtroom. We found that to be something that we had to practice because you have to be ready when you're that person on camera. You have to be ready to be sitting and calm at all times. We did multiple practice sessions before our first federal Zoom trial, and we noticed that the person who, just as any human would, they move around, whether it's grabbing a pad of paper or bending down and picking up a pen out of your bag. Well, those types of motions on a Zoom trial or a Zoom hearing are exaggerated. A jury may not notice it in a courtroom, even though their attention's on you, but on a Zoom trial or a Zoom hearing, the person on the screen in the box that moves gets everyone's attention at that time. You don't want to take away from what the judge is saying. You may not want to bring attention to yourself and take away from what your witness is saying. So you have to be prepared and practice being still. And that means if you have the piece of paper next to you, you have the pen there, and you practice what it looks like on camera to pick your pen up and make your note. Or you practice on camera your reaction to something that doesn't sit well with you. Anecdotally, in our Zoom jury trial, there was one person that rolled their eyes and it was visible on camera. So that person had not prepared their emotional response to a certain thing that was said. And I think, because you can see all of the jurors at the same time, the jurors' eyes dart the minute they see something. So they dart towards a side of the screen. So you know the jurors are picking up on much more attention and much more detail from clients, from attorneys, and from witnesses. Another thing to consider is the volume. So if you want to practice, and practice is paramount, with your volume. If you're too loud, it may sound bad, it may sound overbearing, or if you're too quiet, the jury may not be able to hear you and you may not sound authoritative enough. So it's good to have people on a variety of computers with a variety of speaker types, whether it's standalone speakers or speakers coming out of a microphone or speakers in their earphones. It's good to have people listening to a Zoom practice run and have those people that are listening be in different rooms so that they can hear you. And different people have different reactions to volume and to your voice and to whether you're loud enough and whether you're audible enough. And that, for us, that affected where we positioned the microphone in the room, and it affected the level at which we spoke. We didn't raise our voices and then use our voices very quietly. We tried to speak in a more consistent dynamic so that the person on the other end of the computer wouldn't miss a word that we were saying. So as I've said earlier, I think you'll realize that shuffling and adjustments when grabbing a piece of paper off the floor or taking out your phone or rolling your eyes, the more adjustments and the more movements that are made live on camera, the more amateur the person looks who is speaking on camera or is presenting. That's something to practice. One thing that we also, with regards to shuffling, is we appreciated a level of professionalism in our presentation where we would use a podium. So in opening statements, we will use a podium. In closing statements, we will use a podium. If we have a particular demonstration on Zoom, which we did, we had a demonstration with a number of medicine pills and a glass. We established a procedure with the judge in advance and asked the judge, all right, can we have a brief break before we adjust the camera and move the podium in? And so we turn our video off and we do that. And then when the video camera turns back on, then the judge, the jury, and anyone else watching sees a polished presentation. So we think that minimizing those, if you're thinking of theater, those behind the scenes adjustments or those scene changes, you want to minimize those scene changes for the person that's watching. And so going off video, doing the scene change, and then turning your video back on, of course, with the permission of a judge, makes the presentation to a jury much more polished. Another thing to consider is to practice screen sharing. So to publish a document to a deponent, so if a witness is being deposed, or to publish a document to a juror, you want to make sure that that document is accessible on your computer, that it's the exhibit that's supposed to be marked, and that you're not publishing the document to the jury before you've asked the judge that it be allowed to be published. So this is really speaking for the attorneys out there. There have been a number of instances over the last few years where I have seen an attorney or someone working on the other side put a document up that has not been moved into evidence and has not been permitted to be shown to the jury by the judge yet. I've also seen attorneys fumble when they're looking for the document or they're scrolling through the document, trying to find the thing that they want to show the deponent. So practicing screen sharing with a friend or a colleague and showing them those documents will help you prepare to have a smooth presentation of evidence or exhibits through a Zoom or a file sharing program. Another important thing to think about with practice is if you're on a Zoom trial or a Zoom hearing or a Zoom deposition, the attorney that is on camera should practice with co-counsel who's off camera. So practice communicating with co-counsel. In a trial, as many of you will do, if you're a client, or if you're an attorney, or if you're an in-house counsel, if you're outhouse counsel, outside counsel, everyone knows that maybe you make a note on a post-it note, a thing that you think is a pertinent point, or a thing that you think should be asked, a question that should be asked, or maybe it's just a smiley face to lighten the mood. But that piece of information at an in-person trial, you may slide that across the desk and it may not garner much attention. But on a Zoom trial where there's one attorney and the face of the camera is facing that attorney, any communications where the attorney turns their head will distract the jury. Any movement of the mouth by the attorney that's on camera, if they happen to be muted, will distract the jury because everyone wonders, what is that person saying? So one of the practice points is to practice talking on camera without moving your mouth very much. And if someone's talking to you, you have to avoid the natural human reaction to look at the person that's talking to you. You have to just keep your eyes on the camera or face forward and not move and take in and listen to what the person off camera is telling you. So practicing communication is key. And so is my final point on practice is paramount. One of the things to practice is practicing asking for an exhibit to be displayed. So you may have a friendly or collegial relationship with someone who's assisting you, and let's say a tech wizard who is putting that document up on the screen for you that you're publishing for the jury, as opposed to saying, Mike, where is exhibit one? That's not it. Yeah, no, that's it. Can you put that up? Those more comfortable conversations, and we all fall victim to them, the ums. We all fall victim to them. You want to practice a smooth statement so that it becomes something that you're used to saying. For example, if the jury is going to hear you ask Mike to put an exhibit up, you might want to have a smooth delivery. Mike, could you please display exhibit one? Thank you. And so those types of statements, as you've practiced the smooth statement, there are less ums, there are less pauses or less ticks in your speech, and it becomes a smoother presentation and a consistent presentation for the jury. That wraps up the tip number two, practice is paramount. Tip number three is, I think, a very interesting tip because it's the most dynamic and the one that's full of the most surprises. It's called witnesses in the wilderness. And witnesses in the wilderness are people, specifically witnesses, that you don't control. They're not your clients. They're not your in-house personnel. They're not a claims adjuster or a corporate rep who you've had an opportunity to prep, or if you're one of those people, you haven't been prepped by an attorney. It's the witnesses who are outside of control. It's third-party witnesses, or it's witnesses called by the other side of the litigation, and maybe they haven't prepped those witnesses. And so I often call these witnesses in the wilderness because they are not in the same room with you and they are out there in the wild. You have no idea how they're going to show up or where they're going to show up on camera. So let's go through a few examples. The first is that one witness in a federal jury trial via Zoom testified from his iPhone in a parking lot. So you could hear cars. He was having communications breakdowns. He was not our witness. And so he was definitely a witness in the wilderness. Another one was a doctor who was subpoenaed. And ordinarily, if you're in a live trial, that doctor will come to the courtroom. Maybe that doctor will wear scrubs, or maybe that doctor will wear a suit, and they will sit on the witness stand and they will deliver their testimony. If you have a doctor testify in a live Zoom jury trial, it could be anywhere. So there was a doctor who testified from a hospital wearing complete scrubs with a full double filter. If you can imagine the gas mask filter, left side filter, right side filter, full plastic face covering with a poor video quality. So all the jurors could see was, one, a doctor who's being inconvenienced, and a doctor who was doing something that was very important. So If you can imagine that image, the issues are compounded when you can't see facial expressions of a witness and you can't see or really hear their inflection because they're speaking to you through a massive set of plastic filtration systems. So those are some interesting examples of witnesses in the wilderness, and they create problems. If there's any chance that you can eliminate those distractions by talking with those people, you want to eliminate the where could they show up that's exciting? Where could they testify that's exciting? They make for great stories after the fact, but when someone's trying to convince the jury of a point and minimize distractions, those things tend to overshadow the substance of testimony in trial. And so if you can coordinate with those people, that's important. One of those other issues with the witnesses that are out in the wild is they may not have exhibits. So if you want an individual who's testifying from his iPhone in a parking lot during a jury trial in federal court to have an exhibit, that exhibit's going to need to be given to that witness in advance. It's not like a situation where you, as an attorney and as a party, you're adequately prepared and you have a stack of pieces of paper and the individual who's going to testify shows up and you can hand him the piece of paper and say, take a look at exhibit four. You can't do that. They have to have those exhibits in advance. So you have to make sure they're printed, make sure they're given to the opposing party so that they can see those, and then make sure that those exhibits are delivered to the witness and that they're under instruction under in their subpoena to bring those exhibits for that testimony so that they can testify based on those exhibits during a trial. So those are the types of things that you can do to minimize the extraordinary distractions from the witnesses in the wilderness. It requires a bit of planning and it requires a bit of thinking on your feet. So the fourth tip is the in-person rule. And what I mean by that is you want to be in person if someone else is in person. So if your opposing counsel is going to have a witness in a room, you want to be in the room with the witness as well. If the opposing attorney or the opposing party is going to show up live in the courtroom and that witness is willing to testify in a live courtroom, even though the proceedings are remote, and even though the jury or even though the judge is hearing things remotely, you as the party or as the attorney want to be in the room as well. And there may not be, take a step back. We're, of course, trying to avoid overtly improper conduct such as coaching, whether it's passing a note that you can't see because you're not in the room or head nods. But really, I think this avoids the type of conduct that borders on innocent in the heat of the moment. Humans are humans, and to avoid nonverbal head cues like nodding, just an innocent head nod where there's agreement and it's an accident. You want, as the opposing party and the opposing attorney, to be in the same room. The other important thing is if you're an attorney and you're via Zoom, when another attorney is in a room with a witness, you as the virtual attorney will have a much more difficult time lodging your objection. So it's a general rule that you would want to be in the same room so that you can make sure the court reporter who's in the room can hear your objection, either during a deposition or during a hearing or during trial. Thankfully, for our federal Zoom jury trial, our federal judge imposed a rule that all witnesses must be in a room alone with a camera. So we had procedures like that in place before that trial commenced to avoid those types of distractions and needing to deal with issues if the in-person rule was broken. The final tip, tip five, is enjoy the experience. And what I mean is that there are going to be bumps in the road, and there are probably going to be new stressors that are present in a Zoom trial that are not present in an in-person trial. Whether it's a hiccup or an AV equipment issue or a pain to organize exhibits electronically, no trial, no hearing, no deposition is perfect, whether it's in person or via Zoom. But I really think a positive mindset that it's going to be an exciting experience is far better for your interactions with others and for your own sanity. Really, by doing this, we're all on the cutting edge of technology and law in an industry where law has traditionally shunned technological advancements. The fact that we have fax numbers still, it baffles me. So if you have the opportunity to take a deposition or be deposed or have a hearing or attend a hearing or testify at a hearing via Zoom or be on a trial via Zoom, those experiences are very valuable and they're exciting and you're plowing new ground. So I've found this new shift in the law to be enjoyable. And I think it's in most instances been quite convenient for our clients and for our insurers and our corporations. And we've come up with a lot of best practices in addition to these five tips to make the process smooth and to provide the best value. So with that said, I'm going to close. If anyone has any questions or if you have any concerns or there's things that are coming up in virtual hearings, depositions, or trials that you're interested in discussing more in detail about, I'd be happy to speak with any listener one-on-one. You're always free to call me. You're always free to email me, and I will be available at your convenience. Thank you. My name is Jake Monk from Schutz & Bowen. I look forward to hearing from all of you at some point in the future.
We hope you have enjoyed today's ICA podcast. If you have any questions or need assistance, you can contact Jake Monk at jmonk@schutz.com or 305-379-9116. To learn more about ICA and future podcasts, please visit www.claim.org.